pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next on the agenda is roll call, and Gina and Eugene both called in and said they were not going to make it tonight, so do I hear a motion to excuse Eugene tonight? Ken Johnson second. First, Mark Snyder seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that motion passes. Do I hear a motion to excuse Gina tonight?
So moved. Second.
Okay, Charles first, Dan seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, and that passes also. And next on the agenda is citizen input. If we have any citizens that would like to address the council on council business, please raise your hand, and I'll acknowledge you. Come to the mic, give us your name and address, and allow up to 5 minutes. Okay, since there's no citizen input, do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
Make that motion.
Okay, Mark Snyder first.
Second.
Ken Johnson second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Move.
Okay, Dan first. Ken Taylor seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes too. We'll go to number four, current business. 4.1. Public hearing on the 2014 to 2019 capital facility. Get that up here real quick. Please bear with us as we progress through the legal and technical aspect of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:03 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the city's capital facility plan for 2014 through 2019. This public hearing is required by state law. The capital facility plan has been developed. I will now ask the finance officer, Spencer, to report.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. As the mayor just stated, we've been working on the next 6 years capital facility plan. I put it up on the screen here that it goes from 2014 all the way to 2019. I don't have 19 on there just so it's big enough to look at. I wanted to mention a couple of things here. We've met with different departments around the city, and we've met with the finance committee meeting, or the finance committee, to review the projects that we want to look at planning on down the road. Most of the things in here are things that are familiar from years past. There's computer equipment, the very first one up here. We're just continuing that on out. Under the police, we typically have a rotation where we replace two cars every year. So we're including the $75,000 a year out here. And again, this is a plan. If something is on here, it doesn't necessarily mean it's funded. This is just another tool that we use when we're developing the budget to see if we're staying on track. I wanted to mention a couple of new things that are on here starting here in 2014. Last Monday night during our meeting, the council wanted to include park restrooms in one of the parks, so we included that in here. We also included the possibility of more park rooms, restrooms, in the 2015, so we included that. The skateboard park for 2014, we included that $200,000 here. And I'm gonna, down to the street fund here. The biggest change here is the neighborhood overlay project. Here we're requesting $400,000 this year, and the same dollar amount going out for a number of years here. This doesn't necessarily mean that this is funded. This is what we'd like to see. This this makes it possible for us to go out and receive grant funding. So if we receive the funding and we can go ahead with this, our plan is all set up to accept that. If we go down to the next page there, on the next page we finish out with the water fund, the very top items here, under 2014, this is well 9. We budgeted $1 million in 2013 to start the drilling for the well. That wasn't able to happen. We're looking at doing that early this next spring. So we have $1 million for the new well and the funds for the housing and the transmission line. We're also looking down into the future at well 10. And so here we've built in dollars for well 10. This is the drilling, the well, the housing, and the pump, and the transmission line. It's quite a bit less money than the 2014 dollar figure here. The main difference in between the $2.7 million here and the roughly $2.1 million here is the amount of transmission line needed, the proximity of the well to the sea. That's the big change there. And coming down, there's a tower maintenance program that is on the docket to discuss tonight. And so I went ahead and added this in as though we were going to accept that. This can always change if that's not accepted when we're discussing the water programs of the city tonight. So those are the statements that I wanted to make about the capital facility plan.
I will now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name and address for the record. I'll allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Okay, since there was no public comment, I will now close the time for public testimony. Does any of the council members have comments or questions at this time? Okay. Okay, then I will now close the public hearing at 7:08 p.m. Okay, thank you, Spencer. Point two, Adams County Pet Rescue presentation. I believe Mickey, you doing that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Welcome.
I'm Mickey Keeson. I'm president of Adams County Pet Rescue. With me tonight is Ernie Summers, who's the chairman of our building committee, and Kaya Grant. She's on our board of directors. We're here tonight in reference to the letter requesting an increase of our contract. We currently have a contract with the city of Othello. We've held that contract with you for approximately 7 years now. As of last year, about this time, we've seen a dramatic increase of dogs coming in from the city into your pound. It's directly correlated with a new control officer who is out doing her job as it should be done, and we're seeing the results of that. Because of that, we're experiencing an increase of dogs from approximately 16 to 17 dogs a month to about 22 to 25. So those dogs are brought into the city, current city shelter down there, the pound, as it's commonly known, and we take over. So what does that look like when we take over? We're responsible for the electricity, the feeding, the cleaning, the food, the blankets, the laundry, the care, and the disposal, as we see fit, of those dogs after a 3-day period, holding period. Some of them are claimed by the owners, and that's taken care of by the city. And then the rest of it falls into what we do. As per the contract, and part of the contract with the city, part of our contract with the city of Othello says that we can only hold X amount of dogs, about 20 dogs at a time at the shelter. Because of the increase, we have to do something every month. Just the amount of city dogs coming in creates a situation where we can't hold them as we have done typically in the past. We put them on Pet Finder. We're able to adopt them out for the most part, transfer a few, but mostly it's been sort of an, you know, as kind of an even flow. Well, that's all changed. That's completely different now. It looks completely different. And on the totals, you have to remember that for the city on the 2012, those are 12-month totals. And the other one in the current and the other column, it's as of November 11th, so approximately 10-month totals. So we haven't completed a full year in the calendar year that we've kept these statistics. So there is a variance in the timeline on that. But as you can see, there's quite a bit of few more dogs coming in. So we choose to transfer, and we're incurring costs to do that. We don't choose to euthanize. We choose to adopt. We're no kill. We do euthanize for behavior or medical. But as you can see, those are very far and few between compared to the numbers that we're bringing in. This has decreased our ability to create funds. Because we're a nonprofit, we have to have funds to survive somehow. And what we get from the city is less than 5 to maybe 7% of our total budget. So we are seeing a decrease about half of our ability to bring adoptions in, which is one way that we do generate funds for ourselves. And we're also increasing and incurring more costs than we have in the past to dispose of the animals. Even if we chose to euthanize these animals, it would cost us $100 a dog. It would cost you $100 a dog. That's just what it is. Or if we chose to transfer them out, there's different ways. We choose to transfer. We choose to be a no-kill, and that's how we choose to do that. Because of this increase in costs, we have found it difficult to continue. So we're asking for an increase in contract so we can continue this partnership with us. But on the other hand, I thought to myself, well, what are other cities doing? I mean, what are we looking at? It is not unusual, I have found out, that in the United States, for cities to partner with nonprofits to house and shelter their dogs that come in. That's apparently not an unusual partnership. But what does that look like in Eastern Washington? So I spent some time on the computer and made a couple phone calls and came up with some comparisons. It's tough to find a city that has the same population of Othello and kind of in the same scenario, but came up with some close Eastern Washington comparisons. So for example, Whitman County Humane Society, they're a nonprofit, they receive from the city of Pullman their dogs, pretty much the same as what we do. They have their own facility, as we hope to, but it's the same contractual there. And currently their contract is $51,000 annually. The city of Quincy, about the same population of Othello, if I remember correctly, currently has $39,000 that they pay out to have that same type of service. $50,000 for Moses Lake. Ephrata is a little bit different deal. They choose to transport their dogs to Grant County Animal Outreach, and it's about $95 a dog. They incur the cost of the transport, they incur the transfer fee, and they have to hold them prior to taking them there for three days before that transfer takes place. And then you get Benton City, and they just flat take their dogs to the Tri-City Animal, and it's a cost of $230 per dog. Since that time, they have gone ahead and built their own facility, and that whole structure has changed. But that's what it was in the past. So based on that, we're asking the city to consider an increase of our contract with you. Are there any questions?
Question? No? Okay. Yes, sir. It's Adams County Pet Rescue, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do they do in Riffsville? How's that end of the county?
They currently transport to us, and they have a dog catcher. They have an animal control. They have a pound. And we receive those, and we are currently negotiating with them for $50 a dog. They get about 10 dogs a year that come out of there. The big population difference. Big difference in the way that it's handled and that whole structure. It looks completely different. They have a population of approximately 2,000.
Thank you. No. you transfer 96 dogs at approximately $100 per dog. That runs out $9,500. So, which is basically about the same amount as what you're asking if we raise it to raise the amount to $10,000.
No, you raise the amount from the existing $10,000 to $15,000.
Okay. My mistake. Sorry. Okay.
But it's still on that same note. Once the dogs come in, there's about 222 dogs that have come in to date. If that continues, it'll be about 260 dogs. Mm-hmm. But I don't have those numbers, so I just thought we'd go with what I know we have. So 66 are claimed. That leaves the remaining for us. That's about what I came up with, about 150 some dogs that need to be disposed of in some manner, however you choose. At about $100 a dog, that's about $15,600 a dog, or a year, I'm sorry. That doesn't include the price or what you would incur in having someone to go down and on a daily basis, 7 days a week, 24 every day of the month, every day of the year, to clean, feed, water, and maintain that down there. We also have to incur, we do incur about $2,000 a year insurance liability that per contract we carry as per our contract with you, and we incur all the utilities. The facility down there currently does not have running water in the building. There is one frost-free hydrant outside the building that services the whole area. We have no, now until last fall, there was no warm water or anything to clean inside. So it's pretty basic function down there. It's pretty basic, which is part of the reason we're trying to get a new facility. And when that happens, of course, as we talked before, we are inviting you to join us there. We are making space for you to join us there.
I do agree you are providing a great service to us that we don't have to worry about. I see the numbers. A big number, and like you said, it's contributed to the new code enforcement officer being very aggressive.
And there's just generally the dogs that are out there. As we talked the last time I was here, you know, we have a sense of kind of estimate how many dogs that you guys, as a city, are dealing with, and it's pretty good sized number of dogs. Until we're able to really get in and do a strong, aggressive spay neuter program that benefits all. Those numbers aren't going to change. We're working on that as a nonprofit, but it would take an aggressive, long-term program to really get in there and make changes. I would estimate 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, and looking at what other communities are paying too, you know, at a possibility of $15,000 a year, that's pretty good deal still.
Yeah, you guys are getting a heck of a deal. I mean, you are. But it is what it is. I mean, that we have to come with you, to you, with this proposal with numbers to back it up.
Well, we appreciate you coming because this opens our eyes. Education is always the
yes,
best way.
Yes, so. I appreciate you tabling it. I appreciate you waiting for us to come with these numbers instead of going and moving on this last week without giving us a chance. We truly appreciate that. Are there any other questions?
No.
All right.
Thank you very much, Nikki.
You're entirely welcome. Feel free to contact Ernie or myself or Kaya with any questions you have any time, and we're encouraging and hoping that each one of you can come down and view the current shelter we're at so you understand, you know, what it is, what the pound is, how it is, how we function. And then, of course, to come out and view our new facility in hopes that we're all there together someday.
It's a beautiful facility.
Thank you.
It's going to be gorgeous when you're done.
You.
That's neat. Do I have any type of motion or anything, or do you want to move it to the next meeting?
I think it'll fall into our budget discussion a little bit later.
Okay. I can do that. Okay. 4.3, discussion of cities of distinction. Ken?
Probably about a month and a half ago, I was contacted by a production company that has different television shows that air. On Discovery Channel and There's several other major networks that they produce these shows. Anyway, they would like to do a spot on the city of Ofello. They have a show that's called Cities of Distinction, Places to Live, Work, and Play. They first approached me and asked me a bunch of different questions about the city, the lifestyle, the schools, the hospital. And after that conversation, they wanted to go further with it. They actually wanted to produce a small 5-minute segment for their show that would air on national television. TV. They did send me a further packet, but it was just an email. I forwarded the email to the council members tonight on it. The city of Quincy also did this a couple years ago. We have a short segment, or it lasts about 4 minutes, and I believe we could try to play that tonight. And the city of Quincy did this. This is one of the shows that the company owns too. It's a different name. It's not the City of Distinction, but it's Today in America. And the response from Quincy, I got to talk to a couple other people. They said it helped out their city tremendously on national exposure. But, play this so we can watch it.
As I explore all that's new and exciting about the USA and Canada and what people are doing in order to make a difference, it's an easy way to see what's happening across your own country. Welcome to Today in America. Situated in the heart of Washington, about halfway between Seattle and Spokane, is the thriving and dynamic city of Quincy. Located along the Burlington Northern Santa Fe main line and close to the I-90 corridor and Highway 281, Quincy is home to over 6,800 residents and a whole host of businesses. Boasting small-town charm and big-city opportunities, it's the perfect place for entrepreneurs, families, and vacationers.
Quincy's the kind of place where you feel right at home, whether you're a newcomer or you've lived here an entire lifetime. Our city is innovative, accessible, economically vibrant, and enjoyable. We're extremely proud of our past, but we remain steadily focused on our future.
Quincy was incorporated back in 1907. In the early 1950s, a new group of pioneers came to the Quincy Valley, determined to turn the arid scrub into fertile farmland. With over 200,000 irrigated acres of land under production today, the valley is one of the largest potato-producing regions in the world. Other crops include peas, beans, corn, alfalfa, apples, cherries, onions, carrots, asparagus, and mint. The region is also known for wine production, with hundreds of acres of vineyards and several local wineries. Though rich in agricultural activities, Quincy is more than a farming community. It is home to major agriculture and food processing companies, including ConAgra, Foods Lamb Weston, Quincy Food, and the recent addition, Amway. It is also the site of several data centers, such as those of Microsoft, Yahoo, Intuit, Sabe, Dell, and Vantage. Most of the city's industry operates from the port of Quincy, a leading rural location in the U.S. for economic and business development. The Port of Quincy features industrial sites as well as an intermodal terminal which ships agricultural products to Chicago each day.
A major key to economic growth is infrastructure. The Port of Quincy has provided abundant hydroelectric power. We're located on the main line of the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which we've developed with our partners Coltrane, delivery service of ag products in a refrigerated container to the Chicago area and back to the Quincy area.
Microsoft began building its Quincy data center in 2005 and has continually expanded ever since.
when Microsoft first put down roots here in Quincy, we realized that not just the renewable power supply and fiber optic network, but also the partnership with the city and the port. A perfect example is the reuse facility, which will benefit the citizens and the environment.
We're committed to reinvesting in our community by making improvements in our parks, police and fire protection, community facilities, and projects like our new public library. We made large investments to ensure quality, up-to-date infrastructure in our water, street, and sewer systems, and we feature abundant fiber.
Quincy is not only a sound economic investment for businesses, it is also a wonderful place to raise a family. The city features affordable housing, top-notch emergency services, a full-service hospital, and proximity to higher education. Residents and visitors alike enjoy Quincy's parks and aquatic center, along with many nearby attractions and adventures.
Well, we have a tremendous variety of recreation in the Quincy Valley. We've got entertainment at the Gorge Amphitheater, we've got water sports, we've got fishing, we've got rock climbing, bicycling, golf, winter sports, we've got historic sites and museums, we've got geological tours and geological features, we've got wineries and breweries, all within 3 hours of Seattle.
Whether you're looking for a place to locate your family or business, or simply a spot to vacation or explore, Quincy is a city with unlimited opportunities.
Of course, and also the segment that they're doing, Cities of Distinction, is also hosted by Terry Bradshaw, who will narrate the segment. And after it's aired nationally, one advantage to it is that we get to keep that segment too. We could attach it to our webpage. The City of Quincy also, their Chamber of Commerce has attached it to their webpage. And so it's a valuable tool for tourism, economic development, growth, and getting our city out there, especially for places to live, work, and play. Part of the reasoning was for that is they said because it used to be everybody was going to the big cities to live. They wanted to live in the big cities. And now it's kind of making a shift back towards the small towns. People want to live in the smaller communities, be more one-on-one, and enjoy the small town atmosphere. It does come with a cost, though. We have to share half the production cost for producing the segment. Unfortunately, that's right around $19,800 would be our share for this production if the council wanted to do it.
Wade and I have visited with them a couple times, and they will air it on TV programs around this area. Remember how they said? 11 or 12 programs?
Yeah, something like that.
They gave us a number roughly what they'll air in our area, like Seattle, Spokane, this type of area, where it'll be put out also and aired off and on in those programs. As you saw, the Quincy one, it's very well done. It's actually pretty impressive. Makes you want to move there, doesn't it? You know, and to keep Othello growing, and I think it'd be an excellent opportunity for Othello to look at, consider. So next Wednesday, the 20th, we have another phone interview with them, and I guess we're sort of looking for the council's view on this when we're talking to them, that we can say, yes, we're seriously interested. So council have any comments or thoughts? Or
you were saying that they aired around here, but is it nationally?
Discovery Channel, Fox Networks, they do have a lot in the Eastern United States too. I believe in the packet that I emailed to you, it does have a let me see if I pull it, a list of the different networks that they go with. Let's see.
I think one of the advantages it'll have really helping is it also drawing a lot of tourism into our community, because they do focus a lot in the area, like I was just sharing of one thing that she kept mentioning to us, and you know, like, you know, the Sandhill Crane Festival. I could see where it could really be a huge bump to that, and other things that we have going on in the community, because they do cover those. And, you know, we sort of more or less, it sounds like, control what they do to a point. They give us the outline, and then we help them design it, so.
Yes, they actually have the writers and producers come in and work with community members to produce this segment.
Well, things like this, you know, you don't really know what the value really is. You know, a lot of times you look at something like this, yeah, $20,000 is a lot of money, but you get to thinking about it. If you go out here and advertise in a magazine or whatever, you're going to cost you $1,000, $1,200 for a little strip in there, and all it says Othello on it. That's about all you get out of it. Little blip in it. Here you've got the whole thing, and it shows you what the potential is of the area. Not only that, but it also shows you what you actually have today. And as that gets distributed out through the area or the all over the United States, world, whatever you want to call it, why, it creates a big impact. Like Tim says, tourism, it does make an attraction to that. I know us with the Cooley Corridor, we've worked on things like this. We never put in a actual program like this, but we do advertise a lot in different magazines and whatnot, and you end up with $3,500, $4,000 in a year's time, just in those advertisements. Maybe you get a page or whatever, just a blurb, and that's all you get. Where you got this thing, you got the whole thing, and I think it's, whether we can do it or not, I think it'd be a good investment, really, overall.
You were asking about which networks. It's the Fox Business Network, Discovery Channel, Fox and ABC broadcast stations. It says the Fox and Broadcasting Company and the ABC Television Network each have approximately 200 affiliated stations across the United States that's used. BNN, Business News Network, ION, Media Networks. Those are some of the shows that, I mean, networks that carry it and broadcast the show.
And I also think what we can use that as to also attract business. ACDC, when somebody's looking at Othello, show them a little blurb on Othello. You know what I mean? It'd be a great sales tool for bringing people in and things like that. I guess what we're looking for more than anything is more or less to proceed. Not that we need a vote tonight, but just, you know, to continue talking with them and move forward with this, and then eventually bring it back to council for a vote. Unless you want to do a motion tonight, that's up to you, but.
We'll have to put it in the budget, too. Mm-hmm. That would be tonight.
So, everybody's favorable to this?
I am.
All I can say is that they can make Quincy look like that. Because I've been to Quincy, and it don't look like that.
Yeah. Yeah. They left out going west out of town toward
Manhattan. There you go. Okay, well then we'll proceed forward with it. Cal will be involved in it. And Wade and I will be involved. And we have a meeting, like I said, a phone conversation with one of the directors? No.
I think so. One of the directors.
One of the directors.
One of the executive directors. Yeah, producers.
Producers will be contacting us, and we'll have a visit with them next week from Wednesday. Okay, thank you very much. 4.4. Bid award for Moon Street project. Dan, I assume Larry too, I assume.
On this Moon Street project, Larry Julius from GNL's here, and I'd like to turn it over to Larry to bring you up to date.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. On October 31st, the city received 15 bids for the West Moon Street Sewer System Improvements projects. The bids ranged from approximately $634,000 up to a little over $1 million. The low bid was submitted by Pegram Construction of Othello. We have checked references, went through their bid, made sure all the paperwork was correct, checked with the state, to make sure that they had a valid construction license. They weren't on either the federal or state debarred list, and all of their paperwork checks out. Of the 15 bids received, there were 5 math errors on various bids. None of them, however, once corrections were made to the bids, changed the position of the low bidder. However, the low bidder did make a math error of approximately $118,000, which even added to their bid, they were still low bidder by around $1,100, as you can see on the spreadsheet that was attached to the agenda item. It appears that it was a math error. They weren't trying to unbalance their bid or anything like that. We have discussed the project with contractor. They are comfortable with the bid. We believe that it's a bid item that, even though there was a mistake, we can discuss it with the contractor after the award to determine whether there's any room for negotiating a deductive change order. Because the bid item was for asphalt restoration, and their unit price came in at $2,000 a square yard, which is pretty high for that type of an item. The rest of the bids ranged anywhere from $40 to almost $200 per square yard. However, we can't negotiate that with the contractor until after the project's been awarded by council per state auditor's office. We have also checked with the funding agency, CDBG. They've concurred in award to Pegram Construction. They've done their checking. So at this time, we recommend the project be awarded to Pegram Construction of Othello in the amount of $634,178.03. And in the letter, we said contingent on concurrence of award from the funding agency, but we have already received that concurrence.
Some questions for Larry?
Comment here. You know, it's surprising how those bids run like that. You know, you've got $370,000 variation there,
yeah,
and yet you've got two that are nip and tuck. I mean, it's because we've got a local contractor. Here's one from Auburn that's right on their toes or right on their heels as far as there. So actually, that's probably what that bid should have been. But some of these guys were inflating that. You can tell just by the bids. And
sure,
by your estimate of $800,000, you know, they're $200,000 over the engineer's estimate. That's pretty far out there as far as I'm concerned. So it looks to me like a pretty good bid on that. And I think we're good to have a local contractor to compete with these guys.
Definitely.
It's nice to have a local contractor, period, get the job, because it's local jobs, local money. That money's staying here.
Your money at home.
Yes.
The bid amount is covered 100% by the grant, as noted in the budget item on the agenda memo.
I got one other question. Being we're that far under our grant, is there any way we can use that grant money for some other portion of that project in that particular area?
We can check with the funding agency. As long as it's for the same type of work, they typically have allowed extensions or expansions. So it would have to be done for sanitary sewer work. And we can definitely check with them.
Should have around $150,000 by the time you get through with all the everything on that. And there's a possibility that if you could, that we could do some of that work in there.
That'd be nice.
Good idea. Do I hear a motion then to award the construction bid to Pegram Construction Incorporated in the amount of $634,178.03 and authorize the mayor to sign the contract?
I so move.
I'll second.
Okay, David first. Okay. Dan seconded.
I'm going to abstain from voting since I'm an employee there.
You would.
Okay. All right. Any discussion? Further discussion? No? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The same? And that passes. Thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.
Moon Street Sewer Project Construction Administration and Inspections. That's back to you, Larry.
Yes, thank you. Since the project is bid award has taken place, we are requesting funds to complete another segment of the project, another task, which is providing the construction inspection observation to ensure the contractor puts in the material to the city standards, and to assist the city with the daily paperwork associated not only with the public works project, but with the additional paperwork associated with the CDBG-funded project. We're requesting construction administration and inspection services task order in the amount of $87,000. Any discussion?
Okay.
This also is covered 100% by the grant.
Okay, do I hear a motion to move to approve task order number 10-13 for construction administration and inspection services for the West Moon Sewer Street Sewer System Improvements with Grant Osborne in the amount of $87,000, and authorize the mayor to sign the task orders?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Johnson first.
I'll second.
And Taylor seconded. Are you abstaining again? Nope, okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes also.
Thank you,
Larry.
We'll get contracts out to the contractor tomorrow. Hopefully they'll start within a couple weeks.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, 4.6, preliminary budget discussion introduction. Spencer?
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. Tonight is part two. We started reviewing our budget last weekend. We reviewed half of the funds that we oversee. Tonight we're going to continue that discussion by looking at the street, water, sewer, solid waste, the tourism fund, and we had a few cleanup items from our last meeting. There was the pet rescue contract and a potential new copier to work into the budget. Tonight, the discussion is going to go very much like the discussions that we had last Monday. We've already reviewed the budget in depth, line by line, through the Council Budget Committee meetings. Tonight, we're going to show just truncated versions of the budget to show the main expense sections in each one of the funds, and then I've expanded the red zone, the capital areas, so we can decide on a capital item if we want to do this one or not, and if we do, we'll talk about potential funding sources. Also tonight, I'm going to sit down at the computer so I can, just like last Monday night. Can you hear me? Is that fine? Like I said, we're going to go through the street, water, sewer, solid waste funds. We're going to have a brief discussion about tourism funding. We were able to put in place a lodging tax advisory committee made up of one representative from the city council, two representatives from the organizations that tourism-related organizations that use the money, and these last two here are representing the organizations that pay this tax. There are a couple of attachments up here. Right now I'll talk about the capital requests and the funding sources. When we get down to the tourism portion, I'll come back and we can talk about these last two items, 3 and 4. So the first two . This is the same sheet that I showed you last week. This shows each one of the capital items that were requested through by the department heads, and down at the end you can see the council requests down here. The change that I made for our meeting tonight is if at our last meeting we decided to fund this, I'm adding the funding source, and so you can see the server refresh, we decided to do that through the utility tax dollars. There are two exceptions to that statement that I just made. Two items up here say bring back for consideration, and there's the City Hall copier and the pet rescue contract. So that's one thing that you can have to
hopefully make tonight's conversation go a little more smoothly. The other item that I provided to you is this sheet here. And this is the same sheet that I gave you last week. The change here is I included the capital items that we previously discussed that we've included in the budget at our last meeting. Those have been included in here. So we have our estimated beginning and ending fund balances, taking out the minimum fund balances here to hopefully make it just a little bit easier to see the available funds in each one of the available dollars in each one of the funds. Down here, we're going to start with the street fund, and I paired the street, water, sewer, and solid waste funds with their reserve fund. So hopefully that makes it a little bit easier also. The first fund that we're going to talk about is the street fund. And here you can see the main expense sections are truncated here, so you can see that this is a high-level review of those expense areas. If we get to the capital requests, here's the first series of items that was presented to council in detail during the council budget committee meetings. And with that, we can just start talking through some of these things. The first one on the docket is to pave the alley behind Pioneer Park in between 3rd and 4th. The engineer's estimate that we received was approximately $75,000 for this project. If we want to do this, we have the available funds through the REIT, the utility tax, the street, and the street reserve funds.
Could you bring those up quick? Have you got those?
Yes. So you can see the REIT and the utility tax dollars here. The utility tax dollars, we decided to fund a few items from this item last week, which brought it from about $400,000 down to about $200,000. And then we have the street and the street reserve.
And the reason we want to do this is because of the handicap. There's no parking for handicap without getting out on the gravel and all that, correct?
That was a portion of it.
I think there's two parking lots in that alley, ain't there?
Yes.
One at the west end and one at the east end. And that would include paving the parking lot areas and the alley itself for access.
There's another thought on that. You might be able to get a Vista to help you pave part of that too. Ends there. Running in there, and they're doing that one section of their other building, you know, and whatnot. There's a possibility you can get them to maybe fund a portion of that, so it would relieve a little of that pressure from the city.
Yeah, because they just moved that house out of there, right?
I think another way we could get a little bit of funding for that too is out of the solid waste fund, because we have garbage cans along there, and you get the garbage trucks coming in there, and that, I don't know if that's possible or not, but we could.
I think we discussed that a little bit, and it's the approaches. We could do the approaches possibly out of the solid waste for that, because of the truck on those. And it's the same way we were doing the approaches on the other alleys throughout town.
Is this something you want to do?
Corey, can I ask you a question? When you're going down those alleys, in the ones that we've put approaches, are they long enough? Or did, well, any of them. They're long enough now, because I know at one point they were kind of short and we had them lengthened. Okay. Thank you.
forward with this, or?
You know, we got a lot more to look at. Could I come, or could we come back to it in a little bit?
Yeah, because I think we got bigger fish to fry than that alley.
The next item on here, $8,500 for a plate whacker and a jumping jack.
Well, those are pretty important because that's how you firm up your ground and you dig it up and things like that. So I'd really like to see that funded if possible.
Me too.
So yes?
Everybody needs a new jumping jack.
I did that once.
Oh no.
Dan, do we currently not have those?
We do, but the one we have, the plate whacker, is not very good, and that would produce 18 in this year's fire. And the jumping jack is just about half the one for the so they're just getting better.
It eliminates settling and things. So
yeah.
They're pretty important.
Right.
So yes on that one?
If we move that one over, this is what the any fund balance looks like, 222, and we have a minimum in the street fund of 150. So the next item on here, $400,000 for the street overlay projects.
I really want to see that go.
This is in addition to what we already do, isn't it? No?
No, it would not be. This is one that really, it was very important for that transportation benefit because as you could see, it the total for the streets, the budget is almost $1.5 million. I stated last week, we had some critics on that half-cent tax. That only brings in $600,000. For street repairs and maintenance and stuff, and you could see a lot of. There's another 900,000, and it's being funded out of the general budget and other items that we have to take it out of to help supplement the street. And I would love to continue street. We're going to get behind if we don't continue. We've got a couple streets out there that are getting really bad, Pine Street. But I don't know where we're going to get the money for the streets anymore. I honestly don't. It's a tough battle now, especially with the cost of paving and that going up. We can't get the 20 blocks like we used to out of $200,000. You know, we're down to 4 blocks if we're lucky. I would really love to find a way to keep it, but right now we're sitting at $199,000 in our utility tax, plus we still have the rest of the budget to look through. We have our minimum balance we have to maintain in the street fund. I just don't see any spot right there right now where we could, let alone $400,000,
$200,000. The other available funds are the funds that have been internally designated by council for park purchase and community center. Those are general fund dollars that would be available, although considering the time that it took to build those funds up, that's something we'd want to think about.
We are looking at real estate, so
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you want to start taking out those funds because pretty soon you ain't going to have them. That's what we put them in there for, a specific purpose, and they should remain there.
I agree with you. If we don't stay proactive,
yes, I agree.
The reactive portion of it is going to be a lot greater later. Oil's not coming down.
Could we get $200,000 out of there somewhere?
Well, we have. Come back to in the street fund, we have $72,000 left there. That would bring us down to our minimum fund balance. in our street reserve fund, we have 38. $38,000. That puts us just over $110,000, or at $110,000. We have the utility tax dollars that are still available. So if we use this $110,000, or if we use the remainder of the dollars available in the street fund and the reserve fund, that would put us at $110,000. This would still be at $150,000. The reason that ending fund balance is below the $150,000 is because I'm not showing the revenue from the reserve fund to offset this $38,000. So we'd have $110,000 there. And then we have utility tax dollars that are available. From our discussion at our last meeting, the desire of council was to not touch the REIT dollars so we can slowly be building that fund up again. We used quite a bit of money out of that fund this year for some significant purchases.
Almost $400,000. And it takes a long time to build up those funds in the REIT fund.
Yeah. About $38,000 to $40,000 a year is what we increased that fund.
We could scrape to find $200,000 this year, but it don't take care of next year either, because we're drawing all of our funds down to our very bare minimum to do that.
So if we took the other, right now in the street fund, we're at $110,000. If we took $90,000 out of the utility tax, that would leave $109,000 right here.
Like I said, I don't know what the dollar amount is or what's the right number or the magic number. And if, I mean, put 110 in there, you know, call it a start. But, because if not, next year will be 700,000 or short or what have you. I mean, obviously we got to keep finding more money or ways to generate more revenue. But it's a big problem, and it's not going away. And our streets are not getting any better.
You want to pull $90,000 out of the utility tax and make it $200,000, so the project's somewhat decent size.
$200,000. How many blocks is that?
8 or 9, probably.
We weren't getting any of that funding this year.
Well, there's still the state transportation benefit, which they do have monies, and I believe we've applied for some, but just not have not heard back from them yet. And that's what helped pay for part of Scutney Street last year. And that's still matching funds, even if we get some. We do got to have some. So we do need to. I would like to see at least a couple $100,000
yeah,
in there.
But move the 90. Move the 90.
Yes.
And bet on the come line. Hopefully we get a matching fund. We get to 400 for this year anyway.
Okay.
Put that in there and then see where we're at with the grant or whatever. And we don't have that much. We don't have that much. It's shortened our contract.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a start, but we can't ignore it nor neglect it.
Kind of too far. Mm-hmm. All right.
The longer you wait on those streets, the more it's going to cost you to fix them and repair them.
So if we use that, we use $72,000 available from the street fund, $38,000 from the street reserve fund, and $90,000 from the utility tax dollars, that would leave us a balance of the 150,000. I just don't have the other 38,000 and the 90,000 reflected as revenue that will bump this back up. So that, are we ready to move on? Okay. So that is, that's the remainder of the street fund. The water fund had just a few items here. This first item here is for well number 9. This is a project that was originally budgeted for, or we budgeted $1 million of this project for 2013. We've spent, we've spent very little of that, about $67,000 of that amount so far. I moved the remainder of that $1 million over so we have that in our beginning fund balance for 2014. So when we have our $1.7 million is what we were originally planning on spending this year. And if we bring the other $900,000 over, that gives us our $2.6 million to finish off the Well 9 project.
That includes the transmission line?
Yes.
We need the water. We need the water, yes.
Yeah, I think we've got to continue that one or we're going to be in trouble with that very shortly if we get short of water.
Our next item here is apologies. I'm going to leave this to $2.6 over on this side so we can maintain, so you can still see that we're keeping our $200,000 minimum fund balance. This is something that we would take out of our reserve fund. And if I show you the reserve fund for the water reserve fund, we have $3.2 million there on top of the reserve fund minimum fund balance. So, the next item here, this is year 1 of 6 for the water tower maintenance program,
care of our towers, and I mean, we've seen that there's stuff going on in them that needs taken care of, and it's a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for a...
We looked at this 5-6 years ago, and then I think we made a little cosmetic repairs on it, and that's about all we did, so now it's gonna bite us, you know, and if you don't do it, you're going to have some real major problems. So you gotta maintain those. You gotta keep them up. And then the other issue is you've got some that are right on the borderline whether they're even usable or not. If we don't do something with them before too long, because they'll be looking at them and say, "Hey, you can't use that tank anymore," and then we're going to be in trouble again. So you're going to have to do it.
Well, the first. The first 6 years we're playing catch up to the work that we should have did already. So I know we need to get this done. The price is just going to keep on going up again. It was a big number, especially that total dollar number when I first seen it. But those are some of the biggest investments that the city has, is those water towers, and especially our water.
Yeah, gotta have them.
In our water reserve fund, we have the $3.2 million minus the Well 9 project that we just agreed on. That leaves us with $622,000 available.
Dan or Larry, you have any comments, thoughts on that?
This program, I don't know if you've seen this, if you spend inside and outside, you're spending on things to be
program. It seemed to me like there was some question about there's some direction to look and see if there was another any other company that did this. I realize either Cadillac or the group, but I don't know. Did that ever happen? Is there ever any investigation into other groups that do this kind of thing?
Dan, I asked Terry that today. He said they have looked at some companies out there, but what they found so far is there's no other company who can do the same quality of work that these guys do, the same spectrum of work for this kind of cost. So far, that's all he's found.
Well, that was the question. Did anybody else do that, know that good of going to work at that less price? But
see, is that about right, Dan? What?
Yes.
And I had a chance to talk to Terry too a little bit about it, because I had the question of bidding. Since this is such a large amount, would we have to go out for the bidding process? He kind of explained it that this particular company is like a one-stop store. He says they do it all. Some other companies might do a portion of it, but they're going to contract out for particular areas that they don't do. And then you don't get the guarantees and other things that come along with this one particular company that does it all.
Protect your assets.
So everybody in favor for doing this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if we take that one out of the reserve fund also, it moves our reserve fund balance to $357,000. Estimated 2014 year end. The next item on here is a waterline improvement projects. This is something that would accompany the overlay projects of the city if we were to go forward with those, the $400,000 in the street fund. Right now that's $200,000.
Would that go down then? Because we're doing half the streets overlay that we originally considered. We're going to do 100 instead of 200 instead of 400,000. So would this go to like 200,000 instead of three? These are water lines and stuff. Replace the water lines before they come in and redo the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of the water line improvements go down since we're not doing so many streets.
Well, I don't know if you got a turn, but it's my understanding the street overlay fund will take the street that doesn't need total restoration and come in right in curve back and then pay that back with no water line.
So Pine Street was one of the streets that was designated possibly for 2014, and that has some pretty old water main underneath that. So
we're going to do some of the things we're going to do.
make sense to do the overlining, the overlay, unless you're doing the water line.
Yeah. The Scutney Street, we did them tandem together to minimize the cost.
That was kind of my thought, too. I mean, we do have a few streets that I think we can overlay, but it depends on what we've set up for our streets, and I think we've pretty well with our six-year plan here, we can adjust a little bit, but I think with Pine Street, and I think it was Second Street that was in that category there, that we'd have to look at that to decide whether we needed some underground work first before we do overlay those streets, and I think that would depend on whether we need to use that particular money or not. I think originally when we were talking this way, we were talking about from 7th to 14th working our way from Main Street to the south, and there's some major water lines and changes that we need to do in that particular area. And I think that's where part of that funding may have come out of that thought that we needed to do that first and then overlay the streets. And I'm not sure without going back into the drawings there and look at it, see exactly what we need to do on some of these streets that we're talking about in our six-year plan here. But I'm sure you're can adjust it a little bit, but you need to keep that money in there at least to do that. If it don't happen this year, you're gonna need it the next year, so it's one way or the other, you're gonna probably have to use it.
So we're better off putting it in there.
Yep.
Even if we don't use it, so. Which chances are we're gonna use it.
And that brings the bottom line dollar down to $57,347.
Well, we're spending money. Throw the laptop in there, too.
Well, that we need.
That one we need.
Pretty important, you remember?
We can't collect any money without that, so. Yeah.
Larry, do you really see the well 9 coming in close to 2.6? I know the first estimates that we got for the well were possibly between 500 and 700 for the well itself. And then we got to equip it and then run a mile of 12-inch line. Or
so if we do all of those projects, that'll leave us with our $200,000 minimum fund balance in the water fund itself. And in
pretty like crazy, nothing goes wrong.
And it'll leave our in our water reserve fund, it'll leave $41,347 over our $200,000 minimum fund balance in that fund also.
And what it costs to redo well 5?
Well,
almost 65,000?
Just recently, yeah, about 67,000.
And well 8 also went down. And
yes.
Even though they may be insurance.
Our portion of that is going to be 10,000. Of well 5, at least.
Yes.
I don't have the numbers on the other well yet.
Yeah, we're pushing that line really close to if we have another well go down. It's going to be tough to get insured.
Well, let's not forget,
we've been
spoiled with that $2.6 million sitting in there.
Sitting there.
I mean, but we knew we were going to have to spend that on a well. So, that was kind of like just borrowed money. Mm-hmm. It was just sitting there.
With the Scutney overlay project, we did the waterline improvement projects in tandem with that project. If we're cutting our street overlay project down, it's likely that we would also cut our waterline work down also.
I think, like Larry was saying, I know the sooner that bid goes out, the lower the bids are going to be, because people, contractors are hungry for work. But later on, you wait in the year. I mean, people start getting busy and you get less people bidding, prices go up. So I know we got 2.6 million in there. I don't think it'll go up that high. So I think we could take some out of that if we.
It'll leave a good ending balance at the end of the year. Because are we ready to move on? The sewer fund, I just put this up just for your information so you can see where it's at. There are no red zone items in the sewer fund. So the sewer fund itself ending with a minimum fund balance of, or it's set minimum fund balance. We have the sewer reserve fund where we're planning on ending with $4.4 million. And solid waste fund. There's one red zone item here in this fund. This is the $55,000 for alley approach improvements. This is part of our capital facility plan, and it's something that was built into the budget last year. Is this something that the council wants to do?
It's not the only thing we can spend the money on, so.
Okay. In our solid waste fund, we don't have a minimum fund balance in our solid waste or the solid waste reserve fund. They're the very bottom two items here. So we have 87 and 66. So I would recommend just fund balance. There's the rest of it. So the next item that we're going to discuss here briefly has to do with the tourism. When we first started our budget discussions, there were two items up here that we didn't talk about. One is the analysis that we'll get to here in just a sec. The first one here, I included some information on board docs that is just a brief overview of the tourism dollars, what they can be used for, the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee, what their role is, and then what your role is as a city council. The lodging taxes are, I'll come back. The city council has decided that you want a minimum fund balance of $40,000 in that fund. That's not per resolution, that's just per council discussion a few years ago in the minutes. So what we do is we take all the dollars in that fund that are over the $40,000 and those are available through the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee for apportionment among the different organizations that apply for these dollars. I put together the spreadsheet. This is the same spreadsheet that we used last year where we look at the 2013 allocation, the total funds requested for the 2014 year. We try to build an increase into the allocations if we can. This year we have fewer dollars available, so there was a decrease that we try to keep that decrease as fair to the different organizations as possible. But these are the requests, the applications were all sent to the LTAC committee, and they ultimately came up with these final recommendations in yellow here. If you have questions, Penny is here for some specifics, and also Ken Kaler
was the council representative on that committee.
Any of you have anything you want to, any comments you want to make? Or comments by council?
Looks good.
Okay.
Looks fair.
Okay.
We will build that into the budget.
Thank you, Penny, for being involved. We appreciate it.
So the last part of our budget meeting tonight, we have a few follow-up items from last Monday night. We had, well, here, I'll just go down to those. We have the City Hall copier, which we'll get to in just a sec. The first one I wanted to mention was the $5,000 for pet rescue. There, earlier tonight, they were requesting an increase from $10,000 to $15,000 in their annual contract.
I think it's something we need to do. I mean, what if they say, well, we're not going to take care of your dogs anymore? Then we're hauling them over to Grant County.
We can't do it any cheaper.
No.
I agree.
I'm glad they left. I don't want them to know that.
Be there.
I know. Cover your ears.
So if we bring that up to 15,000, it brings our ending fund balance in the general fund to $520,000. We have a $500,000 minimum fund balance in that fund.
We haven't increased that since day one, I don't think. So, and the number of volume that they're getting, why, gotta make up the difference.
So then the last item for consideration is to replace the City Hall copier. Last week, when we discussed this $15,000 was built in just as a purchase of a copier that would be ours. But we were asked to come back and do a little bit of research to find out what it would be to lease a copier instead. We'd had a couple of particulars there.
Yeah, well, I looked at, got a buddy who sells, who does copiers down in Alabama. I've known him for 40 plus years, trust him. So I asked him about leasing as opposed to buying, and he said about 95% of his customers lease these days for various reasons. One is the upfront cost for one thing. The other is the fact you can keep up with technology for another. And plus you get a maintenance on the thing the whole time. So I got some numbers, and then Spencer and I today looked at numbers and compared the cost over the life of a copier, per se, over 10 years, which is what we've had this copier for. And it turns out that the cost itself is not a whole lot different over the course. Course of 10 years. It was what, Spencer, about $350 a year less to lease over the course of that 10 years. But then you don't have upfront cost. It cost about $2,000 a year, give or take $50 or $100, to lease a copier. It costs about the same spread out over the course of 10 years to buy a copier. But again, you don't have the upfront cost. And the copier we have now, in fact, we looked at the contract, had Rebecca pull the contract, and they're not going to, they will not maintain that copy of that. Yeah. So we're stuck with a copy that, if it breaks down, we'll have luck. Because as technology, as I did my research, technology is increasing to the point where, you know, once something gets eclipsed by a newer copier, at some point they stop making parts for those copiers. We've been very lucky, I guess, with this copy we've had now, the maintenance contract. So talked to three different people. All three of them say leasing seems to be the way to go. Three different copier people, two Xerox and one up here in Moses Lake that we've used before with their proposal for a copier. Given our current budget constraints, you know, Spencer and I felt maybe the upfront cost will be a big deciding factor. Whereas we'll replace this one, the cost, it varies with what kind of copy we want, anywhere from $160 or so a month, plus some cost per copy, up to $400 and something a month, depending on what kind of copy we want. So we're in that stage now where we would evaluate what kind of copier we want to get. But it looks like for somewhere around 200 or so, what did we say with the copies it could cost a month?
When we were running our analysis, we tried to keep comparing apples to apples. So with the purchaser, we had the just single purchase of $15,000. If that's for 10 years, that'd be $15,000. And then the toner is substantial also. To purchase, we estimate that the cost for each year would be about $2,000, like Wade was saying. To lease it would be slightly less, maybe $1,951.
Well, part of that, Spencer, just to interrupt you a little bit, part of that cost, we did an average, and that included doing a lot of color copiers, which, as it turns out, we don't do that many color copies. They're about how many times more, Spencer, to do a color copy? Five or six times more.
Yeah, about almost 10.
10 times more, yeah. I was trying to be conservative. But so those are a little bit inflated numbers, so it costs a little bit less. Anyway, the bottom line is, if we lease, we can get basically a new copier every 3, 4, 5 years, depending on what we decide to do, for about the same price as we'd be stuck with an old copier over the course of 10 years. It includes maintenance, so if it breaks down, they come and do it. Of course, that's included in the new copier as well, up to a point. Then you start paying maintenance on it down the road as well, after a certain point. So it looks like, on the surface at least, Spencer and I want to do a little bit more digging, but it appears that the best option for us would be to lease from someone, don't know who yet, but someone. But that's up to you all. We can come back with more data if you'd like. We can change that line item to, I guess, to 2,000 as a notional amount, or we can leave it at 15 to purchase, whatever you all think.
So leasing would be $2,000 a month?
$2,000 a year.
A year, I mean.
Approximately $2,000 a year. We could be off by, you know, a few hundred either way. These are just preliminary numbers based on what we've learned right now.
Yeah, I think that'd be the way to go, and then you get your upgrades too, you know, rather than if we buy one, we're going to hang on to it for 10 years, and then we're got an obsolete machine again. And like I say, the way the technology is today, why, they change overnight. So you can make a big difference there very quick. And it'll stretch out those payments a little bit too.
Exactly. And at some point, we may not even have use for a copier per se, because everything's going to, you know, printers from a computer. In fact, I think we do our utility bills all on the printer right now from the computer. So that's an example of some of the stuff that we're using for. So it looks like it would be the best way to go.
Thank you for checking into that, because I know I originally questioned that. And I think leasing would be the best option to go. But I think there probably would be closer to 3,000 maybe the first year, and safer with that for
that's probably not a bad idea. Cost. Not a bad idea to budget for that. And then
for the first year. And then you will have your cost set after that. You'll know for the second, third, fourth year.
Probably not.
I would be comfortable with 3,000 in that.
It's always safe just to put 3 for now. Better to have that cushion.
Is that okay? So if we put $3,000 in there, it brings us to an estimated ending fund balance of $517,970. So just over our minimum fund balance for that fund. And that concludes the budget discussions for this year. I'll build all of these decisions in and into the final budget document, and these will come in 2 weeks at our next meeting for public hearing and for final passing of the budget for 2014.
Do we need to add the two things we talked about earlier, the 19,000?
And I think we also said we'd come back to the alley over here at Pioneer Park.
You can do the approaches.
Yes.
You already put that in there.
We said we'd come back to that and look at those. But after going through the budget further, I think this is my 13th budget, and this is one of the tightest budgets that I've ever had to work with this year. We've lost a lot of funds through the state in the last couple of years, and now we weathered the recession very, very well as a city. We had some smart choices that we did, some reserves that we were able to work off. But now with the state and the lack of their funds and the cutting back, and like I said, this is the tightest budget that I have ever worked on. And I appreciate staff for what they've did and their commitments on it too. But
I need to be excused for a minute.
So do we need to put that 19,000 in there though? Do we want to do that or do we not? I mean, we need to put it in there if we're going to do it.
It can't come out of the general budget, so. For the cities of distinction, 19,800, that can come out of the general fund. It's an appropriate expense of the general fund if the monies were there. We have 17,970 available in the general fund.
That could come out of tourism though too.
It can come out of tourism also. We have $40,000 that are set aside there for things like this that come up through the year.
I mean, to me that would make a lot of sense. I mean, you got the Coulee Corridor, you get hunting, fishing, you're promoting our town, Sandhill Crane Festival, all that, I think.
State softball tournaments.
Yeah.
Hey,
is there anything else we can pull from? For
take 10 out of the tourism and the other 10 out of your general fund, and that way we'd.
Problem with paying up tourism, then the next year we got an issue.
Well, that's the only problem, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Organizations that rely on those monies. Yep. So you hate to do that. That's why I was seeing if there's anything else that would qualify.
Yeah, if.
Excuse me. Spencer, Larry, you got a comment?
It is a possible cost.
I think we could.
It's something that I, when I originally talked to these people too, that might be one of the organizations that help out on it too. I'd have to bring it up to the board to make a decision. We are a county board, so we represent the whole county, not just the city, but we also have four other towns and cities that we represent too. And it is one of the possible funding sources. I couldn't even start to tell you a dollar amount, but that's something that the board would have to discuss possibly as funding too.
Bring it up Thursday night.
Yes, I do have we have a board meeting next Thursday. So it will be one of the things I bring up there too.
Support district got their 2 gets worth in too. So, you know, I mean, that's reasonable that they could kick in a few bucks there somewhere.
We'll give them a blip that much in there.
Sean, you had a comment? Yeah, but.
There's like for now and see what.
put a placeholder in there for it. I mean, yeah, we need lots of good ideas, and I think we need to look into those.
Approach them all, and...
But even if they don't do it, I think we need to do it anyway. But it, I think you guys are all right. We need to get some other people involved in this.
Think about putting a placeholder in, people can say we have money. Or as you can tell, we don't. So we're working through this, trying to get it happen. So we can always change that in the future. You as a council can change that. So you have the authority to do it. So do we need a placeholder? Or do we just leave it out for now and we'll see if we can do it?
Let's go for it.
I think go for it. Put your placeholder in for it. So as long as it's there, well then okay. You can always decide later no, we don't want to.
So where would the funding come from?
So we have $17,000 available in the general fund. We have REIT dollars available, $40,000. We can take a portion of each, 10 and 10.
Is that available? Is that one of the, would it fall under REIT?
I would need to look at that a little bit more. I don't believe that it would.
Yeah.
The REIT dollars are more for repair and maintenance of street and park and sidewalk, those kinds of projects in the city. I would want to look, though.
Well, I still say tourism right now, just as a placeholder. We're not spending the money right now. We're placing. And if we talk to some of these other organizations and work on it, and hopefully we could recoup some of that. And it's also benefiting all those other organizations, too.
What you want to do?
Yeah. We can always change it at the next council if we, you know, there's no interest from anybody else.
Seems like somebody said that's what that $40,000 is for. Might just come wrong. So, yeah.
So this would leave an ending fund balance in the tourism fund of just over
$20,000.
Go ahead and do it. Okay. Yeah, because we might get a little of that back from some of these other organizations or whatever, you know, and we can always refund it again.
Question for Catherine, do we have to come back with anything since we're changing what the council had done years ago? Or it's okay, just keep on going, nothing we have to do as a council? It's okay. Just wanted to make sure.
I've just been reviewing, just to follow up on your question, Ken. I have a printout here that shows the allowable uses of the REIT dollars, and that does not fall under. That concludes our budget discussions. If there are any other questions, we can move forward.
That include 4.7 also, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. 4.8, resolution to adopt a code of conduct. Catherine?
Thank you, Mayor. You have obviously several projects where you are the recipient of federal funds, including funds from the CDBG. And as a requirement of receiving those funds, you are required to adopt their code of conduct, which is before you in the form of a resolution. The only thing I wanted to make you aware of is, first of all, if you don't adopt it, you don't get the funding. But number two, this code of conduct is essentially a conflict of interest appearance of fairness code of conduct, which mirrors state law, except in one respect, and that is that under state law, a conflict of interest for municipal officials is limited to a pecuniary or financial interest. With this code of conduct, it broadens that from a real conflict of interest in the pecuniary sense to also an appearance or an apparent conflict, a perceived conflict. So it does make it a little bit broader, and a perfect example might be with Mark Schneider's abstention tonight from that vote. That was not based entirely on a real pecuniary conflict of interest under state law, but it had that been considered under federal. With this code of conduct, that would have been a requirement to recuse himself. So Bottom line is you really don't have much of a choice if you want to continue your eligibility to receive the CDBG grants, but you do need to be aware it is a little broader code of conduct than our state laws covers.
Questions for Kevin? Okay, do I hear a motion to carry to approve the resolution to adopt a code of conduct?
So moved.
Charles first.
Second.
Mark second.
Any further discussion?
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? And that passes. Thank you very much. Ordinance to amend ORC Chapter 4.04 titled Business License. Rebecca.
Good evening, Council of Mayors. As you know, last week we brought in front of you an amendment for Chapter 4 for business licenses to increase the fees for business licenses. Currently they're at $50 where they have been for the past 41 years. So we brought it to council last week to up them to reflect the same as Moses Lake, which would be $80 annually up to March 31st, and then effective April they would be 60, then July they would be 40, and then in October they would be 20. So we've taken all the comments given to us from the council from last week and the meeting we had with the finance committee the previous weeks ahead, and have amended the ordinance of Chapter 4 along with the removal of the wordings for the delinquency penalties, which would be in effect immediately instead of 3 months after, and with the removal also of the half price, which would mean that now all state liquor license and cabaret licenses will not have a discount at half of the year. So that would make them $125 the annual fee all year round, and the cabarets would be $450 all year round. It is on the proposed ordinance. Where it does state that, as you can see, it would be 80 per year, then 60, then 40, then 20 quarterly, and not affect the state license, the state liquor ones, and the cabarets, or the circuses. So at this time, the staff and the City Council Finance Committee recommends the changes as discussed to the 2014 city business license.
Questions for Rebecca? Do I hear a motion then to adopt an ordinance amending the Othello Municipal Code Section 4.04.010 and 4.04.060 and 4.04.110 of Title 4 titled Business Licenses and Regulations?
I make the motion.
Okay. Second. Schneider first, Dan second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Okay. Ordinance to amend OMC Chapter 3.02 titled Use Tax, Natural or Manufactured Gas. Spencer?
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. Through our, as you know, right now, 50% of the revenues that are received into our utility tax fund are moved over to the general fund for the general purposes of the city. The remaining 50% of the revenues into that fund are left in that fund for capital purchases consisting of $25,000 or greater. Through our series of budget meetings over the last month and a half, 2 months, the idea was proposed that we make a one-year amendment to this, make a change it from the 50-50 split to a 60-40 split for a one-year period, where we would move 60% of the revenues into that fund over to the general fund for the general purposes of the city. Then the remaining 40% would still be there with the $25,000 stipulation. So we've prepared two different ordinances here. The stipulation is mentioned in two different parts of the of our OMC, talking about the different types of revenues that we receive into that fund. So at this time, you can see the attachments, the two ordinances there. At this time, it's the recommendation of staff and the budget committees that we accept these ordinances.
How much did that make a difference?
That extra 10% is about $120,000.
And let's say if we didn't do it, there's no way we could have balanced our budget because we've only got a $12,000 buffer right now.
Yeah, this year, as has been mentioned a few times, we're coming against a time where we don't have the reserves that we have that we've had in the past. The state's getting tighter with their funds, so through our budget process, we've had to make some decisions, and really they were some good decisions. It's a good process for the city to go through to clean up and revisit processes, how we do things, how we contract for different items. We made some great headway this year, and this is a process that will just continue into next year's budget and the year after that. So with that in mind, that was the understanding that we would make this a temporary change for just the 2014 year.
I know in committee we looked at this and recommended it as a one year. Hopefully the revenues will start to bounce back after next year, and we'll go back to the 50-50 next year. And I see it stated just for 1 year only in the amendment too, so.
Any other comments by council? We have a motion to approve the proposed ordinance temporarily amending OMC section 3.02.080 and 3.03.060.
So moved.
Charles first.
Second.
Dan seconded. Any further comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. And that passes. Thank you. Okay. Ordinance relevant to a 6-month interim marijuana zoning. Catherine again.
Thank you, Mayor. You have before you tonight an ordinance that proposes to adopt zoning regulations for an interim period of 6 months. So if you are going to consider this, you would need to hold a public hearing within 60 days after the date of adoption, because this is in the context of an emergency ordinance. And I wanted to explain briefly my reason for recommending interim regulations at this point. We had talked in the past about your options, and my recommendation was to address this issue through the adoption of some regulations rather than opting to do nothing or to prohibit it. Since that conversation, a few things have happened that have caused me to change my recommendation slightly. And first of all, the state legislature has dedicated or announced that it has dedicated this session to addressing the medical marijuana issue. And if you'll recall, part of my concern was in reference to the unregulated medical marijuana side of things. The state legislature, in response to a work group comprised of the Department of Health, District Department of Revenue, and the Liquor Control Board, have made a recommendation to the legislature for this next session to essentially eradicate the medical marijuana and require that patients procure their supply through the state licensed stores. This would essentially eliminate the collective gardens, which are the subject of our ongoing moratorium, which is still currently in effect. It would eliminate the medical marijuana dispensaries, and it would eliminate your opportunity to grow your own supply in your house. So they are looking at doing that as the means of leveling the playing field, as it were, and also bringing the medical marijuana industry into some sort of a regulatory framework, much the same as the recreational marijuana. And they anticipate doing that at the beginning of this next session. They've had some discussions that carry over from the 2013 legislature that they will dovetail into this. And they've gotten, as I said, the recommendations already proposed. So I think they're fairly well along in the process, and we can anticipate that as an action that will be earlier rather than later in this upcoming session. So the anticipation from my end is that we will have an answer definitively on the medical marijuana prior to the expiration of our current moratorium. That would allow us to then deal with both the recreational and medical marijuana permanent zoning regulations in one piece, which to me makes more sense. The second thing that has happened is the Liquor Control Board has requested from the Attorney General's office an opinion, an advisory opinion, answering two questions. The first question is, can cities prohibit medical and recreational marijuana uses in their jurisdictions? And the second question is, if they can't, can they adopt more stringent regulations than what the Liquor Control Board regulations currently propose? I have my doubts as to whether or not we'll get a positive answer on the first question, but I will be curious to see if the Attorney General feels that the local jurisdictions have some regulatory authority greater than what the Liquor Control Board's regulations currently provide. If that's the case, we might have some more tools in our toolbox to deal with the local zoning issues as they pertain both to the medical and recreational marijuana, and that would make a difference in our final regulations as well. And I guess the last thing that has occurred is we did get, as you'll recall, the letter from the Department of Justice in answer to both Colorado and Washington's requests that they have some direction from the federal government on whether or not they intend to challenge Washington's or Colorado's initiatives. And in the beginning, when we were having these conversations, I presented you with the option of violating state law versus violating federal law and weighing the risks in each of those courses of action. My recommendation has changed in terms of what those risks look like in light of the Department of Justice's letter, because they have essentially said that they will not challenge Washington's regulatory framework as long as it is a robust regulatory framework. And because they have taken a step backwards, if you will, I think that the risk is greater, quite frankly, in violating the state law and the initiative's directions versus the risks that might have been present in violating the federal law. So because of those events, I think it is appropriate at this point, from my standpoint, to look at some interim regulations, get the answers on these remaining issues from the State Attorney General's office and from our legislature as regards the extent of our authority as well as what's happening with the medical marijuana, and then fold all of those into final regulations. So the ordinance that you have before you tonight essentially takes your three uses and limits your processors and producers to your industrial zones only. I included a provision that requires that any of those two uses, or either of those two uses, that they be conducted entirely within an indoor structure, thereby eliminating outdoor grows. And then the retail uses would be allowed in your commercial zones and industrial zones only. So that's because your current industrial zones do allow for some agricultural uses, so your production was not outright eliminated like some jurisdictions. And you do allow some commercial in your industrial zones, so that would allow the retail use as well in your industrial zones. That's why it's phrased that way. I do have one correction for you that I noticed tonight, and if you do adopt the ordinance, I will provide that corrected page tomorrow, but you would need to make that part of your motion. On page 2 of your ordinance, on the third whereas down, it says that the Liquor Control Board has allocated one recreational marijuana license to Othello. That should read that the Liquor Control Board has allocated 2 at-large retail licenses for Adams County. You don't have one allocated specifically to Othello. And remember, there are limits on the retail licenses, but no limits on the processing and production licenses.
Catherine, in the last MRSC bulletin that we got, the City of Kent and the City of Richland were still prohibiting. Is there any progress on that or any movement on that?
No. There are some jurisdictions that And I have had various reactions with my different councils and have run up against this issue as well. There are some jurisdictions that feel quite strongly that it is their duty to ban these uses from their jurisdiction, and they are using the federal law to justify that. And they are holding out hope that if they do face a lawsuit, their decision will be upheld on the basis that because federal law prohibits it, they're entitled to continue to prohibit it. Given the federal government's stance, I think that is a risky approach, because I don't think that in our Ninth Circuit, and let's all remember where we are in the Ninth Circuit, like it or not, I think that they're going to look at our state law and find that it preempts a local authority's jurisdiction to prohibit it altogether. So I have concerns from a liability standpoint that would be a risk that would be greater than complying with state law. At a conference I was at not very long ago, just a couple weeks ago, we had a presentation from some speakers who are attorneys on the west side that have opened up divisions within their law firms for legal marijuana divisions. And they are advising clients, and they are forum shopping. They've got their complaint drafted, and they are just trying to select now that the deadline is up on us, which jurisdiction they intend to challenge. And it will be a jurisdiction that has prohibited it. And I'm not recommending that any of my clients be that test case, because quite frankly, I think that those interests out there are looking for a smaller jurisdiction that does not have the resources or the staffing to fight that kind of a lawsuit. And I'll remind you that would be a civil rights violation, which is not covered by your insurance coverage. So you would not have your defense costs being covered by your insurance carrier, nor would any ultimate judgment be paid by your insurance carrier. And those are mandatory attorney's fees, the civil rights violations, with possible punitive damages. So I think the risks are very, very significant. And at this point, given what information we do have, I think the risks are greater in violating state law than they are currently in violating federal law. I just got in my packet a CLE on cannabis, and it's directed towards the business side, not the prohibition side. I've had phone calls and inquiries at five of my other clients right now from both realtors and people wishing to invest in establishing a business. So the interest is out there whether we like it or not. We have a state law that quite clearly allows it, and I can't give you anything. I wish I could give you something more, but I can't give you anything in the way of relief from what the state law has provided. So you've got some choices. Your choices are to do nothing, which I don't recommend, because then you stand the risk of being completely unprotected. You can choose to violate federal law and comply with your state law and adopt some sort of zoning regulations that try and regulate it to the best of your ability. Or you can choose to violate state law and comply with federal law and risk that you might be challenged. Again, I think the risks are more in your favor if you choose to violate federal law at this stage. Not great options, but those are your options.
Yeah, you know, and I totally agree with you, and I understand where you're coming from, but I still have my personal views about marijuana, and I gotta stand by those views for myself, because there's a lot of aspects of 502 that weren't looked at. For example, family members, grandkids, kids go over to somebody's home where they do allow marijuana in their home, and why they're smoking it. The effects of it is to the company that is visiting them. They're the secondhand smoke. The aspects of that weren't even looked at. And like I said, I understand where you are, but I have my personal views. I looked at 502 for the vote for the citizens of Buffalo, and it was almost a 3-to-1 margin against it, 502 in the city. And I just got to stand those grounds for my personal self.
motion to approve a six-month interim ordinance governing the zoning of production, processing, and retail sale of marijuana in the city. And on page two, under License Control Board, to approving two growers for Adams County, and not City of Othello.
By doing this, we're becoming more compliant and giving ourselves a safety net, right?
Well, the State Liquor Control Board will begin accepting applications November 15th, and they expect to start issuing licenses by December 1st. So if you choose to take no action, you have a moratorium currently in effect that prohibits medical marijuana collective gardens and dispensaries, but you have nothing that will address recreational marijuana uses. So under the state law, if you do nothing, it is conceivable that somebody could come and apply to the state for a license. You will get notice. If that license location does not violate one of the 1,000-foot buffers outlined in the Liquor Control Board's regulations, and they meet all of the other requirements, the license would be granted by the state, and you would not have any local authority to be involved in that decision, assuming your current zoning permits it, which I believe your industrial and commercial zones would permit those uses the way they're currently written. So that would be the impact if you chose to do nothing. As I said earlier, your other options are to either address it through adopting regulations, or whether they're permanent or interim, or to prohibit it. So
in other words, in our licensing department, where would we stand that way then? Could we could still get a business license out of them, right? Or is that all going to be coming through the state back to us, like what you just explained?
No, they would have to get a business license just like anybody else. The state, but they can't even apply for a business license at the local level unless they get a state license to operate the business in the first place.
Could we change that like we do for liquor licenses or whatever, and have that a different rate considered to what our business licenses are? In other words, set it in a separate category?
Yeah, you can do things in your business license ordinance, and that's one of the, for instance, the question that's been posed to the Attorney General's office by the State Liquor Control Board Chair. In the question about the local jurisdiction's regulatory authority, that is one of the issues they itemized, is the business license regulations, and how far can we go as a local jurisdiction in our business license regulations without really impeding on their rights that they've been given under the state initiative.
That's something we might want to consider as we're changing these fees and whatnot, is to have a special one in for that particular one.
Yeah,
at least like, you have a little bit of leverage.
But like Catherine
like
says.
5,000.
At that point, 575 is a very mute point. This whole deal is just like the First Avenue and Highway 26. Pick the worst, the best of the worst options.
Unfortunately, for most of us, that's what it comes down to. I just want you to be aware that there are time frames coming up that, you know, if you let the December 1st deadline pass you by, you're pretty exposed.
You're an open book.
Talking about right now helps us maintain some control. Is that what it's doing?
Correct.
For now.
A little bit anyway.
It gives you as much control as I can come up with, and that's stealing from other jurisdictions that have spent far more time trying to figure out just how far we can push this envelope.
Got one more question for you. I know the state regulates all the taxes and everything, and supposedly all that money goes to the state, and the local gets very little of that. Have they got anything in there to where the local could actually add an extra tax to that, being they're operating in their area?
Well,
like we do for gambling or liquor license, or like a tavern or whatever, different things like that. and it's where you get a little revenue back into the local for the police department or whatever, you know, for to control this stuff and take care of it.
Right now, the majority of the income or revenue produced from the marijuana market will be in the form of excise tax to the state. The local jurisdictions will receive a portion plus their sales tax. And one of the questions to the Attorney General with the business license was whether or not we've got any taxing authority independent of what's been provided for in the initiative. I suspect not, quite frankly, but I know that AWC is poised right now with their lobbying efforts to request that the legislature include some relief for a diversion of the revenue stream to the local jurisdictions for law enforcement. I think you're also, quite frankly, going to see a push from the health departments, both local and statewide, to compete for that money, those same dollars, for public health education, because in addition to the law enforcement impact, obviously there's going to be a tremendous impact on public health. And you know what the state of the state budget is. So
we're back to the best of the worst options, which is the 6 months. Regardless of your beliefs or not, it's the best option. I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Second. Any further discussion?
Best deal.
It's the best deal you got.
Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say
nay. Aye.
Okay, that passes then. Okay. Okay, any unfinished business? New business? Okay, we'll be going into executive session. The council will now adjourn at 9:10 to go into executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, parentheses 1, parentheses B, to consider the selection of a site or acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase. The executive session expected to last, how long do you think? 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. No action will be taken during the executive session.